Welcome to Top Stock Picks. I am your host, Jay Taylor, here with you to launch this new weekly podcast as an adjunct to my weekly radio show, Turning Hard Times into Good Times. That's aired live every Tuesday at the Voice America Business Channel at 3 o'clock p.m. New York time. Well, believing that we are in the early stages of a major bull market in precious metals and in commodities in general, I believe, just not finding enough time at the Voice America Turning Hard Times into Good Times show, so I've started to talk to newsletter writers and some companies from time to time on my Top Stock Picks show. And that is, the podcast is posted every Tuesday, so you can listen to it after my radio show. It's posted at J Taylor Media, J-A-Y Taylor Media. It also appears on YouTube. The next, I should mention that the next Metals Investor Forum is coming up on May 5th and May 6th, downtown Vancouver. If you're interested in going, if you think you can make that that event, I would strongly urge you to do so, because I think there's some very interesting companies and good speakers there as well. If you're interested in the junior mining sector, I think it's one of the best shows that I've been a part of, and that's May 5th and May 6th. Go to J. Taylor Media and just click on the banner, Metals Investor Forum banner. Name and email address is all you need for a free entry, but it is limited, the number of people that will be allowed to enter the hotel there downtown Vancouver, because of it is a limited forum. It's the space constraints there. So be sure to go to J. Taylor Media and sign up for this event if you can be there. One of the great speakers that's going to be there, one of my favorite competitors in the newsletter writing business, is John Kaiser, and he's my guest today. John is an independent analyst based in San Francisco. He's covered the junior resource sector since 1983. He has a great background, has done a lot of work, and a very innovative thinker, and one who is very independent, and always a very honest opinion you'll get from John. He's not a fluff guy, and he's not a BS guy, so really glad to have him with me. Thanks for joining me today, John.
Jay, it's a pleasure to be on your show.
Always good to talk to you. I want to ask you about three of your favorite exploration stocks. I know that you've mentioned you'd like to talk to two of my listeners about today. But, you know, you've picked one that's been really hot lately. In the last week or so, it's really caught fire. It's called Camino Minerals. Trades in Toronto under the symbol COR, and you can buy it, as I have down here in the States, under the symbol CAMZF. John, what did you see about that? Because you got in really early, and it looks like they could be on to something major, a Peruvian copper play. Tell us about it.
Well, Camino Minerals, I put on my 2016 bottom fish list that was published at the end of 2015. It was trading below a dime. What I liked about it was Ken McNaughton's team, you know, Bud Hillmeyer and Perry Durning, the guys from Silver Standard. And what was interesting, when they were within Silver Standard, they did fantastic work, found deposits, knew what they were doing then. And then Ken decided to go on his own. And he's had a couple of years of struggling trying to get anybody to take him seriously, even though he was involved with the Pretium and the Pedaria and all these other projects. What finally has got them going is the Los Chapitos project in Peru, which is an iron oxide copper gold system. And they drilled four holes into it, and they reported two of them about a week and a half ago. And one of them is a discovery hole. And this stock, which you could have bought all you wanted below a dime in the past couple of years, has traded as high as 223. They intersected 100 meters of 1.3% copper sulfide. What the important thing is, Ken McNaughton developed a geological model based on the context, the geological context, and they did geophysical surveys, magnetic surveys, and chargeability IP surveys, and they came up with a target model. And what has Ken excited and the market excited is that the drilling they did has confirmed that the model is correct. And we are waiting for hole number four, which is drilled right into a magnetic anomaly and a chargeability anomaly, suggesting that there are conductive sulfides at the base. This hole was pushed to 380 meters. This could come anytime in the next couple of weeks. If it is similar and even better than hole number two, then we know we are into a major system. Oxide copper, lower grade near surface, potentially open pittable, but a deeper, higher grade, 1% plus grades of sulfide copper at depth, a major new discovery. This is the kind of discovery that the market is looking for, where a company has done everything right, the stock starts cheap, everybody is betting on a discovery success, and here we have it in the making. This is a great one to watch.
Well, it certainly is exciting and a feather in your cap, John, for picking it up at such an early stage. I think before we go any further, I'd like to just ask you to tell our listeners where they can go to pick up your work and perhaps subscribe to your letter.
You go to kaiserresearch.com. And you can subscribe for a 30-day trial, which gives you access to everything for $100. Or you can get the 90-day version for $250. And that one also gives you another 270 days of the Spec Value Hunter recommendations, which are my formal recommendations. The bottom fish picks are the more expensive option because they are more obscure, earlier stage, and I'm only looking for sophisticated investors who will do something like pick up a Camino at 10 cents and patiently wait for everything to come together.
Well, it's certainly, I think people that are active investors will certainly want to take advantage of it, and certainly I'm quite sure, John, I can tell my listeners that not every stock you pick goes from 10 cents to $2.23, or you wouldn't have the time to talk to me. But in any event, you do have a lot of successes in the past. I know that, and we'd like to explore some other possible successes going forward, starting with another company that you like a lot. Scandium International Mining trades in Toronto under the symbol SCY. You can buy it down in the States under the symbol SCYYF. I've got 225 million shares out at about 30 cents Canadian money, leaving it with a market cap of around 78 million Canadian dollars. It's a company that, we'll just tell our listeners about it. What is Scandium, first of all, and what is Scandium International Mining Corp up to?
Scandium is an obscure element that is a perfect marriage partner for aluminum. When you alloy scandium into aluminum, it makes it stronger, which means you need less of it to achieve the strength, which is very important to anything that moves, the automotive, aerospace, shipping industry. It also makes the aluminum corrosion resistant. It enables the weld joint to be as strong as the material itself, which is a horrible problem with aluminum. That's why airplanes are riveted together rather than welded together. So, but the problem is it is a dispersoid. It does not concentrate well in the earth. It is more abundant than lead, yet you can get like 40% lead grades in the earth. Scandium historically is 100 ppm. That's what the Soviet mine in the Ukraine, Sofia-Vodi, was. They mined that. They didn't care what it cost. They built their MiG fighter jets from this. Nobody else developed scandium-based aluminum technology because you just could not get enough scandium on any scalable basis to build anything. But that has changed with these discoveries in New South Wales, Australia, and Scandium International is awaiting a mining lease to develop the first ever primary scalable scandium supply. This could come in the next 2 weeks. This is a story that's going to be repeated by many companies. They're only proposing to produce 40 tons of scandium oxide during the initial production scale. But once the end users become convinced that this material can be available at, say, $2,000 a kilo, and that the supply be scaled up according to demand, this will grow from a 10 to 15 ton per year market worth $20, $50 million to 1,000 tons per year worth a billion to $2 billion over the next decade. This is a metal which the renewables, the greens, love. It's a metal that the opposite of the greens love, because if you can make your cars in that stronger and lighter at the same time, without compromising safety, you're going to save on fuel costs. So it is agnostic in terms of this whole climate change debate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so it's just the economics will drive it. So the uniqueness here is that they've come up with a deposit that is with higher concentration and hence more economic to mine, John. Is that the story here?
Yes, so I mentioned that the Safi Vodi deposit that the Soviets mined was 100 ppm. These laterite deposits in Australia are 300 to 500 ppm. That's 3 to 5 times higher grade. They're on surfaces, these pancakes that you just scoop up. They're already, fairly loose. There is still some trickiness in developing a flow sheet to get the scandium out. And basically what they need to do is an autoclave, just as you use for Nevada's, refractory gold deposits, put it all into solution, and then you tease the scandium out. You basically have to do that with rare earth deposits. But with rare earth deposits, you end up having like 15 different rare earths in the solution, and they drop out as a powder, and then you have to redissolve them and tease out the individual ones. This is much simpler. You're just teasing the scandium oxide out into a powder. Then you blend it in with aluminum to create a master alloy. And this is a big development. The company isn't just a digger of holes in the ground and a purveyor of light powders. They also have the internal ability to make master aluminum scandium alloy. And they just did an agreement with an Australian company that's an aluminum recycler, and they are going to make their own master aluminum scandium alloy, which makes it much easier for them to supply all the end users out there. Because the big thing that the end users need is confidence that there will be supply. They need material of reliable consistency so that they don't have to worry about impurities in it. So this company has the ability now to control the interface with the entire market. That's why this mining lease, when it comes through, that'll be a big deal. The project will cost $100 million to develop. They have 80% interest in it. The 20% is held by a wealthy American family, which will either put up 20% or convert it to an equity stake in the company. They'll have 30 business days to get this done after the mining lease is granted. This will become a big story. And it isn't like the rare earths where it was all about displacing Chinese supply. This is about facilitating supply of a material that the industry wants, that Elon Musk will want for his Teslas, for his SpaceX program. This is, I think, the best story. That's why I have a significant position and been recommending it for a number of years. There are 250 million shares out, and they will need to raise the money. But you can go to my website and see the numbers as to what happens at the different prices to be financed. This right now is my top pick, and I think it'll be a huge winner.
Oh, well, John, so is it very unique? I mean, this is the concentration of 300 to 500 PPMs. Are there other laterite deposits out there that are known, or is this company sort of really in a monopolistic position here potentially?
No, Robert Friedland's CleanTech Holdings has the Syreston deposit, also in New South Wales, and it was originally a nickel cobalt laterite, and they actually used the scandium grade as a marker to delimit when the nickel cobalt became uninteresting, because the scandium ends up enriching when the nickel and cobalt depleted. So they ended up having this donut around this hole in the middle. And a few years ago, they realized, oh, the hole is not the goal. It's the ring, this worthless ring scandium, that's the big prize. So they put together also a feasibility study and would like to develop the scandium. But they've now realized that the nickel cobalt is the bigger prize, because cobalt is a key input for the batteries, electric car batteries.
Sure, yeah.
And cobalt, half of it comes from Congo, and Congo is becoming ever more unstable. So they've now shifted the focus to developing a large-scale nickel cobalt system with a possible scandium byproduct supply. There are also several more deposits, similar, less advanced. This is a first-mover advantage. Once the first company to reliably produce this, any end user is going to do a deal with them. And it's not like others can undercut the price in any meaningful manner. In the long run, This is not like gold. This is not a metal whose price is going to go up. This is a metal whose price is going to go down as they develop more operating efficiency, are able to produce this at a cheaper price. This is why they have, although they're only going to produce 40 tons per year, they could go to 150, 100 to 150 tons per year from this deposit alone, and then run that for 10 to 20 years. And they have a second deposit that's similar that they could also bring on stream. So they don't need to discover anything more. They just need to develop the offtake market and demonstrate to it that, yes, we can supply this at $2,000 a kilo. We can make a profit at it. So we will continue to do this, and we will expand it as you need it.
Do you think the offtake market may be a part of the financier group that comes in? Because this is a company with a relatively small market cap at this stage.
It is a possibility that somebody could come up and who wants a reliable supply. They've already have 7.5 tons allocated to an outfit in Kingston, Ontario, which is a former R&D team from Canada's Alcan, and the company limited the amount that they get because they want to be able to parcel this out to a number of different groups. That's why this Master Aluminum scandium alloy thing so important, because all kinds of groups will ask for, say, 100 kilos, 200 kilos of this stuff, start tinkering with it, and they won't want any publicity because they want to beat the competition. They want to come up with a better product. And so the company's playing this strategy of having as many possible end users, being able to get small parcels of supply, and then whoever wants to sign up for a formal offtake agreement, that'll be a first-come, first-served type of thing.
All right, interesting. And metallurgically, though, John, you think there's not any, I mean, the risks are minimal there on the metal, as far as metallurgy goes?
Well, they've done the metallurgical pilot tests and so on.
Right.
Willem Divestine, who is their CTO, I mean, this is his area. He used to work for BHP. He's a specialist in laterite deposits. So I'm pretty confident that they've got Nigel Ricketts also on board. This is a top-notch team. It's ex-BHP people. In fact, this is why it's still so cheap, because these are like sort of big company people who are not very market savvy, and they've been shunned by Bay Street and Howe Street because they don't do the normal, promotional razzle-dazzle stuff. But they do have the interest of this family, which is at the moment is still requesting that their anonymity be respected. But this group, the main principal, he built a company, a shipping company that ends up doing several $1 billion revenue. He just retired from it in January. He's roughly my age, sort of mid-50s. And these guys, they understand that this is the type of story that's going to turn a lot of heads. It's a story meant for Wall Street. The company is a U.S. reporting entity, so it's got all the headaches that come with that. I would expect this company to not long be a Canadian quoted and listed company.
Probably be listed on the NYSE or one of those pretty soon. Well, that's really exciting, John. Very interesting. I know you talked to us about that a year ago or 2 years ago. Thanks for sharing that. The next one that you mentioned to me is Adamara, Adamara Minerals Corp, which I also have on my newsletter, trades in Toronto under the symbol ADZ. You can buy it in the States, as I have, under the symbol DDNEF. 94.3 million shares out at 20 cents Canadian, giving it a market cap of only, less than 20 million Canadian. So what's the story about this company? Now, I know they were hoping to find some gold resources, gold reserves, ultimately, that they could have processed perhaps through another mining operation that's running out of ore in northwestern or northeastern Washington. What can you tell us about it, and why are you so excited about Adamara at this stage?
Well, Adamara Minerals is headed by Mark Kalibaba, and I covered the predecessor company, Diamonds North, when it was exploring for diamonds in Canada's Arctic. And they were quite successful in finding pipes, both on Victoria Island and in Nunavut. But unfortunately, none of those pipes ever quite had the macro grade needed to develop into a mine. And then they crashed and burned after the 2008 crash, reorganized. And Mark said, okay, I'm tired of flying all the way up to the north and dealing with remote jurisdictions. How about Northeast Washington, which is a district where there have been a number of high-grade gold mines? The most recent is the Buckhorn Mine, operated by Kinross, formerly called Crown Jewel, discovered in the 80s by Crown Resources before it was absorbed and eventually acquired. They tried to put it into production as open pit mine. That doesn't work very well in Washington. It's got a pretty good environmental opposition to that. So Kinross developed it as an underground mine, and it's produced a whole 1 million ounces of like 10, 12 gram. Mm. Very, very profitable. They ship it down to the mill about probably 70 kilometers. They ship the ore. This deposit is now depleted. The mill is still processing some stockpiles. It's going to be mothballed for about 2 years. They've done an agreement with the community. And so now the question for the entire area is, well, is somebody going to find something new? And this is where Mark went in there about 4 years ago. And always underfunded. You know, we've been in a horrible bear market. Nobody was interested in anything. The gold price was trending down. The optionality plays were terrible. And, of course, nobody was interested in discovering exploration. And I had Adamara as a bottom fish, and I gave up about 2 years ago because they had an awful balance sheet. Everybody accrued their salaries. You know, they were working for nothing. It was like classing toiling geologists. And early last year, a group out of Vancouver said, okay, we'll give you money at 2.5 cents. And so they financed it, got it turned around. Mark started cleaning up the balance sheet, took care of the fuel cash liability up in the Arctic. And I reinstated it as a bottom fish at the end of January, after I saw Mark's presentation at the Metals Investor Forum, where he explained the new strategy that he had developed and applied with remarkable success. And that strategy was to fly a magnetic EM survey over that whole area with the goal of trying to understand if there was a geophysical signature that highlighted the known deposits. And magnetic surveys have been done in the past, and we know that these Lanefoot and all these overlook and so on, they all have a good magnetic signature, but nobody had ever done the EM to see if there is a conductivity signature. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, the geophysics showed that they all lit up with coinciding mag EM. But even better, there were a half dozen other ones that showed up in and around these depleted deposits that had never really been explored. And when I saw this, and these Metal Investor Forum things, they have all of 10 minutes to make their pitch. And the goal is not to argue why you're going to be right. The goal is to show you, explain what you're doing, hook the audience, and then you go over to their table afterwards. And I did that, and I was amazed. I made it a bottom fish recommendation at just around 10 cents end of January. And they put boots on the ground in the area of the Big Banana Anomaly. This is like a very large mag EM conductor. And Mark had said, this one's probably no good. It's too big. The rocks on top are these volcanics that aren't part of the mineralizing events. And it's probably graphite due to a lithological contact. And graphite is, of course, the bane of EM. EM surveys, because they light up. You think you got wonderful sulfites, and all you have is a bunch of pencil lead in there. So this is like classic old-fashioned geology. He put the boots on the ground. They had the little XRF unit, which can't measure the presence of gold, but it can measure the presence of most of the other elements. And they walked this area, and they started seeing limestone outcrop that is altered, and they started getting a copper, arsenic, and silver numbers in the surrounding ground. They realized this bad rock that has been mapped for this area is a thrust, pushed over from the west, and it's just a veneer covering this, and there are these windows. And so there's now a very good chance that that conductor is not graphite, that this is actually this type of a sediment-hosted skarn style of mineralization where the solutions come up, they hit the chemically receptive sponge of limestone and drop out the sulfides at the base, at the contact there, and create these medium-grade gold deposits. And so they've got eight or ten such new targets in the area. They've tied it all up. They're going to start drilling. They're going to use a proper drill this time. They were using a little winky drill in the past few years. It was almost, they might as well have had a donkey and a pick and be out there. That was like the scale of exploration. Now they are going big time. They've got 30 million warrants. You mentioned 93 million issued.
Yeah.
There's 120 million fully diluted. The price of digging themselves out of a hole was to get these warrants. There is an acceleration clause if the stock ever gets above 20 cents. So they've already had early exercise. They've got $1 million in the treasury. So this is the kind of, they've tied up all the land. Kinross owns the mill. They would either buy out Atomera, or Atomera, if it does have something, might even just simply acquire the mill from Kinross. So this is a very exciting story. It's a liquid stock. You can buy and sell it with ease. It's not these reorganized type, things where you have to trade by appointment. So I like this story. I'm very optimistic that we're going to see a gold, high-grade gold discovery revitalize Northeast Washington. And Mark's also arguing that this is a different style of deposit than previously thought. This region has potential for multi-million ounce deposits, similar to those that are in Nevada, obviously not the same mantle context as Nevada, but still a lot better than the 4 or 5 million ounces that have been dragged out of this region in the past 100 years.
Right, and I understand that Atomera will be at the Metals Investor Forum coming here on May 5th and 6th as well, John.
Yeah, I think that will be one of the talks that everybody will be very, very interested in. And hopefully Mark's got lots of new material to help us understand where exactly he's going to be drawing on. Because that map that he showed, he was so freaked out after it about the kind of reception he got from people like me and others that he removed it from the presentation on his website. He has not made it available. He's been in paranoid mode that Kinross will wake up and realize that its backyard is actually very well endowed with potential. So hopefully his paranoia will finally end, and we will see a lot more detail in the public domain.
Okay, John, we're going to take a break now, but folks, don't go away, because when we come back with part two of our discussion with John Kaiser, he will share with us one more of his favorite exploration stocks, namely SK Mining Corp, and he will also tell you about a new mine investment community that is being created on the internet that I think will be a great help in improving the odds of success for people who invest in the speculative mine exploration sector. This is a very exciting and new investment community. I can't wait to get involved with it myself, so don't go away. Listen to part two of my discussion with John Kaiser. We'll be right back.